Really, we are so far apart in how we are looking at our history. We really need to come together. And that's really what we recommend and how our portal works, is we take a very, very fine look at history and we bring black and white people together to engage in reparative genealogy and looking at our history together and forming bonds of repair.
Lottie Lee Abdullah, I want to thank you for being with us. Descendant of an enslaver in the Mississippi Delta with reparations for slavery, Randy Cotterman, fifth generation descendant of Zeke Cotterman, enslaved by George Adam Keller. Randy co-founded the Reparation Project along with Sarah Eisner. And we want to thank Yoruba Richin, the director of The Cost of Inheritance, an America Reframed special. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
From applicant tracking systems to chatbots to facial recognition, artificial intelligence is transforming our world for the better and also for the worse. Tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. for The Imaginary Possible, a show that looks at the captivating potentials and the troubling realities of artificial intelligence today. Only on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Monday, January 15th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream. Keep Alive the Dream is an annual celebration of the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This year's event includes guest speakers and musical performances from the MLK All-Star Band, Eli Hardy, and more. Again, there's a special live broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream this upcoming January 15th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Commissioner Carmen Rubio runs for mayor. Winter weather heads to the Portland metro area. And in national news, the Justice Department sues Texas over a controversial new immigration law. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 9th, 2023. I'm Eric Leuschner. Portland Commissioner Carmen Rubio joins the race for mayor. She'll be competing against two of her city council colleagues, Mingus Mapps and Renee Gonzalez. Rubio points to her track record of bringing people together from different sides of an issue. Rubio has had a few wins under her belt lately, too. In December, she proposed using Portland Clean Energy Fund dollars to fund city bureaus facing steep cuts, like the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Last fall, her proposal to streamline Portland's complicated permitting system won out over a competing proposal from Commissioner Mapps. She's also overseen the Housing Bureau for the past year and touts the opening of several new affordable housing apartments. But she's faced criticism from climate activists for engaging in meetings out of the public view with Zenith Energy and clearing the way for the company to expand its crude oil operations. Rubio's time in office has been relatively conflict-free, and she boasts a more liberal track record than Mapps or Gonzalez. States have a large pot of money to spend on transportation. A new analysis of how states are using those funds ranks Oregon fourth in the nation. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Oregon ranks in the top five in a new report measuring how states spend on transportation. With the passage of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and Inflation Reduction Act, John Bailey with the Natural Resources Defense Council says transportation funds roughly doubled. His organization has evaluated how states are using that money and ranks Oregon fourth in the report. He says while the federal government writes the check, states have a lot of flexibility in how they can spend the money.
Congress has said to states, you can go be innovative and be creative about how you use this. You do not have to use this only for road construction. And so Oregon uses a relatively high percentage of that money to support fixing bridges, funding transit, and safer walking and biking.
Bailey says Oregon also passed clean car and truck rules. The NRDC used 22 metrics for the analysis, including measures for states planning for climate and equity concerns. Transportation is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the country. Bailey says transportation policy is critical for rural areas, too.
Transit plays a very important role in getting people to work and getting people to school. I think there's a stereotype that that's strictly an urban thing, but that's really not the case. Rural transit plays an integral role in the transportation system in states all across the country.
Bailey notes that the transportation funding will be renewed in 2026, but likely not at the current levels.
So this is a unique time period to take advantage of it. It probably won't happen again for another generation.
California, Massachusetts, and Vermont are the only states to rank higher than Oregon for doing the most to improve equity and climate outcomes with the federal dollars. Washington State rounded out the top five, and Idaho was among the lowest-ranked states at 44th. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Transit service on the Blue, Green, and Red Max lines will be disrupted for 6 weeks, starting on Sunday. The Max lines will be majorly limited while TriMet continues its Better Red project. Ultimately, that will mean 10 more stops west of the Beaverton Transit Center. It will also eliminate bottlenecks at the Portland Airport that have plagued the line. Between this weekend and February 25th, the Blue Line will be suspended between Northeast 7th and East 102nd. The Green Line will only be operating between Southeast Main and Clackamas Town Center. The Red Line service will be entirely suspended. In these next 6 weeks, TriMet will be running shuttles between the closed stations, but they warn that it will be busy and that travelers should look for other modes of transportation, like TriMet's regular buses. The lines are scheduled to reopen on February 25th, and TriMet says there will be one major other disruption to MAX service later this year to finish the project. Winter weather is headed to the greater Portland area this weekend, with some snow showers expected as early as this evening. The National Weather Service predicts a dusting of snow for North Portland and the West Hills, the inland areas of Southwest Washington, and a couple of inches in Columbia County in the Gorge. Blizzard conditions are expected for the Cascade Passes through Wednesday, with whiteout conditions at times. Drivers are advised to stay off the road, even if they're experienced drivers in the snow. Friday and Saturday are also expected to bring snow and very low temperatures for the region, potentially below 20 degrees. There may be up to 2 inches of snow over the weekend. Areas above 500 feet of elevation have the highest potential for snow and serious wind gusts. Experts recommend stocking up on provisions today, checking in on neighbors, and making sure people are equipped with shovels and ice melt to clear the sidewalks. Oregon lawmakers are expected to consider funding some administrative costs for a new federal child food assistance program in the upcoming legislative session. The Summer Electronic Benefits Transfer, or EBT, program, which would bring $35 million federal tax dollars back into Oregon each summer, covers all food benefits and half of the administrative costs. Eric Galatis has more.
The risks of child hunger increase dramatically when school cafeterias close for the summer, especially for the 1 in 8 families currently facing food insecurity in Oregon. David Wieland with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon says lawmakers have an opportunity in the upcoming session to ensure that all kids in the state can access nutritious food through a now permanent summer EBT program, which Governor Tina Kotek has called a priority.
Now we just need Oregon's legislators to fund summer EBT, because this program will have a huge impact on over 300,000 children in Oregon this summer.
Oregon helped shape the new program in pilot form over the past decade. Families that qualify will get $40 per child per month for food purchased at locations serving SNAP recipients. Some critics of assistance programs, including boosts to SNAP benefits during the public health emergency, have claimed they keep people from reentering the workforce and can lead to government dependency. Most families that qualify for summer EBT have jobs, but earn less than 185% of the federal poverty level, around $39,000 a year for a family of four. Jackie Ward-Kerwald, also with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon, says the program has long enjoyed bipartisan support.
Every child in Oregon deserves to have an equal chance to thrive. And regardless of what else is happening in their lives, they deserve to have nourishing, accessible food that will set them up for success in the coming school year.
Summer EBT is expected to bring $35 million federal tax dollars back to Oregon each summer and covers all food benefits and half the administrative costs. Wieland points to data showing that every dollar in federal food benefits generates up to $1.80 in economic activity.
So based on the number of children eligible, Oregon could see an economic impact of about $53 to $64 million from summer EBT benefits in the summer of 2024.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Galatis.
Hundreds of pro-Palestinian demonstrators are arrested in New York. New Hampshire lawmakers discuss seceding from the U.S., and some state lawmakers say National Guard troops should stay home without a declaration of war. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Well, I think as the violence escalates, we have to make our message known. And it's not coming from the top, so the people are sending the message. After all, it is our tax dollars.
Actor Susan Sarandon says it's essential to maintain pressure for a ceasefire in Gaza. More than 300 pro-Palestinian demonstrators were arrested Monday after blocking New York City tunnels and bridges. Protesters also interrupted President Joe Biden's speech in Charleston, South Carolina. Chants of ceasefire now were drowned out by chants of four more years, but Biden says he understands the point.
I've been quietly working with the Israeli government to get them to reduce and significantly get out of Gaza, using all that I can to do.
Biden's speech at the Mother Emanuel AME Church marked the site of the 2015 murder of nine by a white supremacist. Biden emotionally called out right-wing extremism and says he'll run as a defender of democracy. The president says he's standing by Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who was hospitalized for several days before informing the White House. But members of Congress say Austin could have put military readiness at risk. Democratic South Carolina Representative Jim Clyburn is a close Biden ally.
I don't know whether it was him or somebody inside of the military establishment that decided to do it this way, but I'm sure he will do a little better going forward.
More than two dozen state legislatures are considering barring National Guard soldiers from deploying overseas without a formal declaration of war. Retired Idaho Army National Guard Sergeant Dan McKnight with Bring Our Troops Home says that could apply to 20,000 now on active duty.
If it's important enough for us to send the lives of Americans into a foreign land for combat, then Congress should do the right thing and they should debate it and declare it and put their name on the line before our soldiers ever put their boots on the ground.
Military experts say any state laws would likely be superseded by federal authority and struck down in court. New Hampshire lawmakers might send voters a referendum to peacefully break away from the U.S. if the national debt reaches $40 trillion. Republican State Representative Jason Gerhardt says the public is tired of paying for bills they didn't incur.
There's already a mood in this state to kind of step away from the empire building and just focus on our own people who need help right now.
Several rural counties and blue states have started long shot processes to redraw state lines. Michigan Republicans have ousted state chair and election denier Christina Caramo following a year of infighting and debt. Caramo claims the vote was illegally organized and that she's staying put. And the Republican Party of Florida has ousted Chairman Christian Ziegler while police investigate a rape accusation. Ziegler denies the charge, but he and his wife Bridget have admitted to a consensual sexual relationship with the accuser. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Immigration will drive much of the conversation leading up to the November 5th presidential election. The U.S. Department of Justice filed a lawsuit last week against Texas and its Republican governor to block a new immigration law from taking effect in March. Texas's Senate Bill 4 would make it a state crime to cross the Texas-Mexico border without authorization as a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Ros Brown reports.
Texas is the epicenter of the U.S. immigration debate and now faces a lawsuit over plans to jail those who enter the state illegally. The U.S. Department of Justice sued Texas last week over a new law that allows state police to arrest migrants suspected of crossing the Texas-Mexico border without authorization. The federal action follows a similar lawsuit filed by three other groups, including the ACLU of Texas. ACLU attorney David Donati believes regardless of citizenship, communities of color, including Latino, Black, and Asian American, are already affected by the state's anti-immigrant rhetoric.
The new laws are a dramatic escalation, even beyond what we have already seen in the state of Texas. And so Texas communities rightfully are very afraid.
The federal action is meant to prevent Texas from implementing the new law on March 5th. The Department of Justice argues it violates the U.S. Constitution because only Congress has authority over immigration enforcement. The new law would mean up to 6 months in jail, and repeat offenders would face a second-degree felony charge with punishment of 2 to 20 years in prison. Donati says it's unfortunate the immigration issue has become politicized. He believes the conversation should be about why so many people are trying to enter the U.S. at the border in the first place.
Why is it that people feel compelled to leave their homes, to take their families on treacherous journeys, to fight for their survival? And nothing in this bill addresses the human needs that these individuals face or materially improves the circumstances that we Texans face.
In a second lawsuit filed last week, the New York City mayor sued 17 Texas charter bus companies that have driven thousands of migrants from Texas to the Big Apple. That suit seeks more than $700 million to cover the costs of caring for migrants transported to the city. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's Keeping Democracy Alive. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 33 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy as well with a high of 42 degrees. Today in history, in 1908, French philosopher and author Simone de Beauvoir was born. She had a significant impact on feminist existentialism and feminist theory. She's perhaps best known for her work, The Second Sex. The quote of the day is from Beauvoir, who said, quote, "Self-knowledge is no guarantee of happiness, but it is on the side of happiness and can supply the courage to fight for it." Scientists are testing for forever chemicals in a Montana river that's a key resource for the Crow Nation. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Scientists are sampling public water sources nationwide to test for what they call forever chemicals, which they estimate can be found in nearly half of the country's tap water. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche reports scientists are also analyzing data from a river that's culturally significant to the Crow Nation in southeastern Montana.
The U.S. Geological Survey this summer wrapped up sampling in a study testing for PFAS and other contaminants in the Little Bighorn River. USGS collaborated with Crow Tribal member and Little Bighorn College Water Quality Project Director John Doyle, who has spent decades working to address water quality issues and environmental health on the Crow Nation and along the Little Bighorn River.
It's our drinking water and Crow Agency. We have a surface water plant. It's agriculture, irrigation. It's recreation. People swim in it, fish in it, and hunt along its banks. But it's also used for many of our traditional ceremonies and uses.
According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, PFAS is a family of manufactured chemicals that in humans may, alongside other possible health effects, increase the risk of cancer and cause developmental delays in children. Testing along the river also includes a range of other chemicals like pesticides and pharmaceuticals. Although Doyle says he hopes none will be found, he is concerned about impacts from wastewater treatment and other activity upstream.
But it could be any number of things because there's a lot of stuff that goes into the Little Bighorn River that we don't know about.
Analysis of the USGS data is still ongoing.
My hopes and dreams are that we're able to completely restore the Little Bighorn River to the state where we can drink it and feel good about it.
For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The trial of a 54-year-old St. Paul Island, Alaska man accused of strangling his wife gets underway in Anchorage Tuesday. A grand jury indicted Joshua Rukavishnikov on charges of second-degree murder in the killing of his 37-year-old wife, Nadezda, who was also known as Lynette. She was found dead in the couple's home on St. Paul Island in September of 2021. He told police the death was accidental and occurred when the two had been fighting. The case drew attention after the couple's 2-year-old son, Joshua John, died a few months later after being medevaced from St. Paul to an Anchorage hospital with a serious head injury. The child's guardians were later charged in the toddler's death. Alaska State Troopers say 33-year-old Stephen Melovidov and his 30-year-old wife, Sophia, initially told them they did not know how the boy was injured, but investigators say text messages between the couple told a different story. The autopsy found multiple head injuries and bruising in the child's genital area. They're scheduled for a court hearing at the end of the month. The back-to-back deaths rocked St. Paul Island, a remote community in the Pribilof Islands, which had not had any homicides since 2006. For many on the remote island, the tragedy speaks to the deadly consequences of domestic violence that hits Alaska's small, isolated communities especially hard. The new Marvel Studios featurette Echo streams Tuesday on Disney Plus and Hulu. Five episodes follow the Native American lead, Maya Lopez, exploring her Choctaw culture and history. Executive producer and director Sydney Freeland says they work closely with the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma every step of the way for accurate on-screen portrayals. Alakwa Cox, who's Native American and deaf, plays the role of Maya. She says this is their chance to uplift Indigenous voices and let the world know Indigenous people are still here. A number of Native actors star in this series. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Public health experts say the spread of health misinformation on social media is contributing to a growing distrust in science and a decline in vaccination rates nationwide. As cases of COVID-19 increase, they say the danger of misinformation and why it spreads should not be underestimated. Catherine Carley reports.
Public health experts say the rapid spread of health misinformation online is contributing to a dangerous decline in vaccination rates. Surveys show the percentage of Americans who believe vaccines are unsafe has nearly doubled since 2021, as social media users falsely claim approved vaccines cause autism, cancer, or infertility. Dr. Monica Wang from Boston University's School of Public Health says these falsehoods spread faster than the truth, with damaging results.
This health misinformation spread can erode trust in healthcare systems. It can lead to people delaying when they go to a doctor to seek help.
Wang says social media algorithms are keeping users in so-called information silos, unexposed to credible health sources or even contradictory views. She says without robust regulation of misinformation content, individuals are left to discern what is true. Studies show misinformation regarding the COVID-19 vaccine has cost the U.S. up to $300 million a day in healthcare and economic losses since 2021. It's also contributed to an estimated 300,000 preventable deaths of unvaccinated individuals. With COVID-19 cases increasing, Wang says scientists can also use social media to create health content and regain the public's trust.
We as researchers can do a better job about communicating our science, and that means we start communicating our results in our processes and language that's easy and accessible for everyday people to understand.
Wang says social media users should look for health information from established medical institutions and avoid content making sensational medical claims. And she says, when in doubt, don't share information that lacks scientific credentials. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
The weight loss drug Ozempic is in high demand, making it a market for scammers. Experts are warning about the numerous red flags to watch out for when looking for the drug online. Edwin J. Vieira has more.
High-demand products are usually big targets for scammers, and weight loss drug Ozempic is no exception. Scams across the U.S. are being reported with promises of quick access to the drug. The scam offers people searching online for Ozempic a significantly lower price than at a pharmacy. Ads, websites, and social media posts are offering it without a prescription. All people have to do is pay with a digital wallet app such as Cash App or Zelle. Kristen Johnson with the Better Business Bureau of Connecticut says these are all red flags that it's a scam. But given the lengths scammers are going to, they can be a bit harder to recognize.
One consumer reported he actually had a teleconsult with a supposed doctor, and this just sort of legitimized the process, made it seem like it was a real pharmaceutical company, but after he placed the order, he never received the drug.
She adds when that consumer tried to call customer service, they only got automatic responses back, nothing more. Johnson says this can prove detrimental to consumers who could lose hundreds of dollars to these kinds of scams. She notes anyone who has been scammed should report it to the Better Business Bureau's Scam Tracker immediately at bbb.org/scamtracker. Other things consumers should be on the lookout for include counterfeit products. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration finds fake Ozempic has shown up in the U.S. drug supply chain. Johnson notes scammers strike when a person is most vulnerable.
someone in this position that has been looking, that has been trying everything and nothing's worked for them in their weight loss journey, may be more susceptible to this type of scam.
Ozempic manufacturer Novo Nordisk announced shortages of the drug that could take years to catch up on. For now, the limited supply is being given to people who are already prescribed the drug. Johnson worries scammers will use all that time to keep taking advantage of people looking for Ozempic. This is Edwin J. Vieira for Connecticut News Service.
What will 2024 hold in the world of international politics? For one commentator, 2024 is likely to be dominated by continued bad news on the global environment, wars in Ukraine and Israel-Palestine, governance and debt in Africa, and illiberal democracies. He says the wild card is in the U.S. elections. Should Donald Trump win, expect unprecedented chaos in U.S. politics and society, and in U.S. foreign relations. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. 2024 is likely to be filled with more than the usual challenges to planetary safety and survival. Here's a look at 10 issues and one wild card that suggest what's ahead internationally that is worth our attention. First, it will be another year of record temperatures and accompanying environmental stresses, more droughts, hurricanes, floods, species and coral reef losses. Antarctica's ice loss will be particularly remarkable. The agreements reached at the COP28 International Climate Conference will be cited again and again, but probably not in celebration of widespread compliance. Second, major wars in Ukraine and Israel-Palestine will continue throughout the year, with international support for Ukraine and Israel trending down. Expect the Ukraine war to feature more Ukrainian attacks inside Russia and some spillover of Russian attacks into NATO countries, especially Poland. The humanitarian crisis in Gaza will become unmanageable as Israel's occupation tightens. Israel may be convulsed by renewed conflict between the far right and liberals over judicial independence. Its war with Hezbollah may not be containable, leading either to Israeli military action in Lebanon or to conflict with Iran or both. Third, failed and failing states may increase under the weight of coups, civil wars, climate change, and deteriorating economic conditions that include high food insecurity. Africa has many such stories: Sudan, Niger, Burkina Faso, Somalia. But Africa is not alone. Haiti, Myanmar, and Pakistan also stand out. Fourth, the debt crisis for the poorest countries will intensify, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, where every country is deeply in debt to China and has no foreseeable way out. Fifth, China will mainly be looking inward, not outward, as its economy gets deeper into trouble. Internal security will have top priority for Xi Jinping as he doubles down on party, military, and social discipline. Repression may intensify in an effort to thwart rising social dissatisfaction. Sixth, China-U.S. relations may improve marginally as high-level diplomacy normalizes, especially military-to-military communication. But improvement depends on stabilization of the Taiwan situation following upcoming elections and a cooling down of tensions in the South China Sea. Seventh, the nuclear issue in North Korea will again raise alarms as Pyongyang carries out more long-range missile tests. Another North Korean underground nuclear test is also possible. The chances of a resumption of U.S.-North Korea diplomacy seem remote. Eighth, illiberal populism, aka strong-arm autocracy, is likely to strengthen in so-called democracies such as Modi's India, Orbán's Hungary, and Erdogan's Turkey. Expect anti-democratic leaders in China, Russia, and elsewhere to continue their disinformation efforts aimed at supporting right-wing politicians and denigrating liberals. Worse yet, centrist parties in Europe will continue to pacify the far right to maintain their ruling coalitions. Ninth, cyber hacking and other threats to governmental and personal security will increase. The hacking issue seems destined to be a top matter for U.S.-China negotiations. And tenth, immigration will continue to challenge liberal governments and give fuel to far-right politicians and extremist groups. The tendency everywhere will be to limit immigration by narrowing amnesty and labor residency rules. Finally, the wild card, the U.S. elections. A Trump victory would mean a turnabout from international involvement to domestic upheaval, as Trump seeks retribution against his enemies. His politics of revenge will have global consequences. It would portend a dramatic decline in democratic governments and liberal values, a significant withdrawal of the U.S. from alliances and international organizations, pressure on Ukraine to give in to Russian occupation of its land, a major reduction in U.S. foreign aid and other international programs, termination of U.S. commitments on climate change, and a significant uptick in U.S.-China tensions, especially over Taiwan. Even a Biden win, if not accompanied by Democratic control of the House or Senate, would spell trouble for U.S. international commitments, starting with Ukraine and climate change. Authoritarian leaders and politicians around the world will cite the U.S. retreat from democracy as a model and act accordingly. Sorry to be so pessimistic, but facts and trends are inescapable. It would be nice to live in peaceful, harmonious times, but we don't. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, January 9, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Eric Galatas, Catherine Carley, and Edwin J. Vieira. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.